Viva Frelimo!
Viva!
Viva Frelimo!
Viva!
Frelimo, aina mwisho!
Aina mwisho, Frelimo, aina mwisho!
Frelimo, aina mwisho!
Aina mwisho, Frelimo, aina mwisho!
Viva Frelimo, the story of the national liberation struggle in Mozambique, the story of a victory, and of the men and women who made it possible.
Frelimo, aina mwisho.
Aye, Frelimo, aina mwisho.
Part 6, The Struggle Continues.
Ife ana Frelimo zowona.
Ina bado kumusa.
Ife ana Frelimo zowona.
Ina bado kumusa.
Frelimo
yawina.
Frelimo
yawina
zowona.
Ina bado kumusa.
Frelimo
yawina.
Frelimo.
The death of Eduardo Mondlane, Frelimo's first president, was a serious blow to Frelimo. But by the time it happened, in February 1969, even this could not stop the advance of the Mozambican liberation movement. The attempt by the reactionary Uria Simango to take over the leadership of Frelimo also caused some disruption. But Simango was finally expelled from the movement in May 1970, and the stage was set for dramatic advances in the liberation war. However, Frelimo's enemies did not see the situation like this. The Portuguese colonial regime was sure that by murdering Mondlane, they'd put Frelimo back to square one, and that all that was needed now was one big push to get rid of Frelimo once and for all. The man who was to give that final big push was General Causa de Arriaga, who arrived in Mozambique in 1969. And by 1970 was the commander-in-chief of all Portuguese forces in the country. Causa was depicted by the colonial regime and its allies as some kind of invincible military superman. As one South African newspaper put it, he was supposed to show the world who was boss in Mozambique. The newspaper, the Johannesburg Star, talked of Causa's astonishing versatility. He was an engineer, professor, author and businessman, as well as an expert in military strategy. He wrote Portugal's first book on atomic energy, represented Portugal internationally on nuclear affairs, and held cabinet rank. A formidable enemy for Frelimo was how the Johannesburg Star saw Causa de Arriaga. Formidable indeed, yet it was Causa de Arriaga who was to help pave the way for the defeat of Portuguese colonialism by launching the biggest and most expensive military fiasco of the 10-year war. It was called Operation Gordian Knot. Operation Gordian Knot was launched in May 1970 and was directed mainly at the province of Cabo Delgado in the far north of the country. That was where General Causa thought his men could break the back of Frelimo, and he threw everything he had into the battle. There were 50,000 Portuguese troops involved in the operation in a province which had a population of about 500,000 Mozambican peasants. That means one Portuguese soldier for every 10 peasants. Causa really meant business. His military engineers built more than 250 kilometers of roads and paths to take the troops into the Frelimo-liberated areas. The drone of Portuguese warplanes could be heard every day as they trailed back and forward across the sky, discharging vast quantities of bombs onto the population. Marines, paratroopers, and helicopters joined in the massive assault. Aircraft dropped a million pamphlets calling on the Frelimo guerrillas to lay down their arms. There were constant radio broadcasts with the same objective. By September, the Portuguese were claiming victory. An army spokesman in Lisbon, the Portuguese capital, announced that General Couza de Arriaga had dealt a crippling blow to Frelimo and a death blow to guerrilla plans for a big southwards push aimed at the site of the Cahora Bassa Dam in the province of Tete. A South African journalist who specialized in covering the war wrote, "Samora Machel still has a couple of thousand men in the northern Mozambique wilderness, but they've lost the initiative. A series of hammer blows has forced them into disarray." It was all, however, wishful thinking by the Portuguese and their allies, as the future was to show. At the beginning of Operation Gordian Knot, the Frelimo leadership had analyzed the enemy's intentions and concluded that they were trying to reconquer the liberated areas by invasion. Since the people were Frelimo's main strength, the freedom fighters carried out a huge campaign of mass mobilization and organization so that the people could take on the battle as it developed and could defend their achievements. As Samora Machel later explained, "We gave jobs to everyone. We liberated the creative initiative of the people, drawing on the experiences of the wars of resistance and the liberation struggle, combining the use of traditional weapons with modern ones. We protected the crops that the enemy wanted to destroy. Bombs prevented us from cultivating by day, so we cultivated at night. We increased the number of small fields, thus increasing the number of targets and dispersing them. Everywhere, day and night, the enemy was consumed by the immense strength of the organized population. The enemy suffered constant losses and its morale disintegrated. Thus, Operation Gordian Knot, the greatest action of Portugal's colonial war, was completely defeated." That was how Samora Machel saw Gordian Knot in retrospect when he was addressing the Third Congress of Frelimo in 1977, following the total defeat of Portuguese colonialism. Of course, at the time of Gordian Knot in 1970, victory over colonialism seemed very far away. But still, the freedom fighters knew their own strength. They'd stood up to a massive onslaught by the Portuguese armed forces and prevented these forces from recapturing the liberated areas. Many Portuguese soldiers died. And, to the horror of the Portuguese high command, as Gordian Knot stumbled to a halt in the second half of 1970, Frelimo opened a new battlefront nearly 1,000 kilometers away. The new front was south of the Zambezi River in the province of Tete, in the area of the giant Cahora Bassa Dam. It was a disaster for the Portuguese.
Mozambique,
Mozambique, nossa terra bendita. Hoje luta pela liberdade.
Mozambique,
Mozambique, nossa terra bendita. Hoje luta pela liberdade.
Nós queremos.
Nós queremos.
Cahora Bassa, one of the biggest hydroelectric projects in the world, had nothing to do with the economic development of Mozambique. The electricity it produced was to be sent to South Africa, and any benefits from the project inside Mozambique were to go to Portuguese settlers in the Zambezi Valley. The Portuguese government hoped to attract 1 million settlers from Portugal to occupy the area. In addition, the dam would create a huge lake along the Zambezi, making it very difficult for Frelimo guerrillas to get across. Frelimo had been operating in the area north of the river since 1968, and the Portuguese were well aware of the threat that would be posed if the guerrillas extended their operations to the south. By 1970, the Portuguese had deployed a heavy concentration of troops along the river, and they saw this as a vital defense line, an impenetrable barrier. But by the end of 1970, Frelimo was setting ambushes along roads south of the river, and by next year, Portuguese military camps in the area were being attacked. In October 1971, two Portuguese Air Force officers were killed by Frelimo near the airstrip at the town of Tete, the provincial capital. By this time, there were 20,000 Portuguese soldiers in Tete province, and many of these had been taken out of the other war areas, Cabo Delgado and Niassa, far away to the east. These areas were now considered virtually lost by the Portuguese, who were now hopelessly overstretched. A year later, in September 1972, the war reached the stage of devastating attacks on Portuguese air bases. Moeda in Cabo Delgado was blasted by rockets, and 18 warplanes were destroyed on the ground. A month later, the target was the military airport at Tete, in the west of the country, and this time 17 aircraft were blown up on the tarmac. And while all this was going on, with the Portuguese not knowing which way to look for the next attack, Frelimo had been steadily preparing the ground for a thrust further south. South of the province of Tete lay the rich heartland of Mozambique, the center of the country, the provinces of Manica and Sofala. It was an area of great agricultural importance for the Portuguese, and it was more than that. For there lay the vital road and railway lines which linked the port of Beira with Ian Smith's Rhodesia. Through these routes, the Portuguese were helping Ian Smith to bust international sanctions. And in July 1972, Frelimo opened its new war front in precisely that part of Mozambique. The threat to racist Rhodesia was obvious. The alarm bells were ringing, and in October, Ian Smith was in Lisbon to speak to the Portuguese dictator, Marcelo Caetano. Smith was worried. When he returned to Salisbury, there was a meeting between the Rhodesian and South African ministers of defense and chiefs of staff. The purpose of the meeting was clear. Could the Rhodesians and the South Africans find any way to make up for Portugal's inability to halt the advance of the liberation struggle in Mozambique? Although they did not know it at the time, it was already too late. For the suffering of the Portuguese soldiers in Operation Gordian Knot and its aftermath had destroyed their morale. The seeds had already been planted for an upheaval within the Portuguese system itself. Portuguese colonialism in Africa was doomed. And for Ian Smith, too, the writing was on the wall.
Frelimo, aina mwisho.
Aina mwisho, Frelimo, aina mwisho.
Frelimo, aina mwisho.
Aina mwisho, Frelimo, aina mwisho.
You've been listening to a chapter in the story of the liberation struggle in Mozambique. This 9-part series was produced at the studios of Radio Mozambique in Maputo, and you can hear the next installment of Viva Frelimo at the same time next week.